Social networks. Social networks are, most simply stated, just people connecting to people. And if you're familiar with network jargon, some people are just nodes in that they don't have that many connections. Some people are hubs in that they do have many, many connections, or they know many more people. Some are connected indirectly through degrees of separation, so that if I know Honoria and she knows a guy named Knut, which she actually does, then I can know Knut through her even if I haven't met him, which in fact I have. So there are these potential ways to map social networks through immediate connections and through like hops or degrees of separation. Now, is everybody kind of okay with the terminology there, the nodes and networks and stuff? Networked your beauty. We were thinking, well, appearance network works a lot, sort of a set of works. Peak application, experimentally in recent years, really kind of a different way to describe virtual communities, and it was a way that had more of a business feel to it. A lot of us who were doing like online community consulting and stuff like that would say online social networks. But now there are these specific applications, and they're sort of friend of a friend networks. There's a bunch of them. I think there's more than 100 of them now. And what they do is allow you to connect to your friends and then to see who their friends are and perhaps establish connections with those friends. And just to give you an example of a few of them, there is Rise Business Networking was the first one that I encountered. And it's basically that. It's for business networking, though. Actually, when I got there, I found a whole lot of people I knew that weren't business people but were there because it was kind of fun. And the aesthetics of Rise, in part, was in photographs. People were posting photographs like crazy until Rise came up with a kind of scary and horrendous policy regarding intellectual property, and some of us backed off. But it is kind of a photo-intensive site, and others tend to have photos too, which was a big change for those of us who had been hanging out on places like The Well, where it was all command line and text, and we had no idea what anybody looked like and could never find them anywhere. Friendster, everybody knows Friendster, right? Friendster was more of a social network. People dating, I found a very want to make are just that you and the way who through to the next guy, the guy your body calls, I know, work this business from it. Basically, you can, or get features that were there. There were people that on eBay getting money for go friends you've used for different things. Shape of you. There's a standby at Orchid. You can see there's this one, say, 1, 2, 6 degrees in social.
Both social and technology connections, concentrating on aesthetics. And by aesthetics, I mean, we're all going to define aesthetics here, not just technical elegance, but also balance, beauty. Am I? Can you hear me?
Yeah,
I think you'll need to speak up.
All right. I'm on two mics. Okay. By aesthetics, I mean not just technical elegance, but also balance, beauty, and cultural values. Now, social psychology research has made up a little rap song called Forming, Storming, Norming, Performing, Forming, Self-Through. Group Mason Spawn have faith learns that we just wean machine network. You see quite a phase, visionary one through the other in some format. Have you drives sex? So, and of course, is the social scene at their side. Play when you're someone who's in patterns, they all childish, tactical, and reach to the level of identity. Comments to ignore, don't admit them. Cultures can, anyway. Are as Brenda Laurel said in her keynote on Saturday, media are alive. Earlier in the information age, hugeness, which fostered the anonymity in which trolls thrived, was considered as customer. Handle combines on a bunch of different, the common breasts, new friend and lover. A lot about these, as well as another. And all the internet, the chain communication foundation from and your cultural district.
I don't know if I agree with John.
And I think that I might start by taking a look at a couple at a slightly different approach. And before we get into this, I want to pull back because I want to talk not about online social networks or virtual communities. I first want to talk about what social networks really are. And John got into a couple of these, but I just want to go over this really quickly. One of the things that I'm advocating is design for social networks. That doesn't mean the design of online communities. That doesn't mean weblog design. What it means is understanding what social networks are, how they function, what the dynamics and the value exchanges are, and then designing for those dynamics and value exchanges with the end goal that we develop interfaces, applications, and approaches that we haven't thought of so far. Excuse me, in order to do that, I'd like to tell you a little bit about some of these brief things that go into this. It's an approach to networks. Social networks come from graph theory, and developments in this today come from all kinds of different fields. It's really a popular thing right now. Has anybody here read books like Linked? Anyone here read Linked? Yeah. Or books like Six Degrees, or people like Ethan Waters, his book, Urban Tribes. They're all dealing with this network approach, not a Friendster approach, not a blog approach, but a network approach, where these different types of media and different types of applications are one type of thing, but not the only one. So social networks, let's just get this straight. Social networks does not equal social software all the time. And what it does mean, if you're designing for social networks, what it is it's taking into consideration the complex systems and the value exchanges and the people. And the end result could end up being social software, or maybe not. Maybe the end result is going to be what you do in a neighborhood. Maybe the end result is going to be a gathering of people. Maybe the end result is going to be a physical space. I don't know. So why this approach? Why turn the question on its head? Beyond social software, social networks have a whole lot of relevance. And when you begin looking into this, you can look at platforms for developing products and services, applications and interfaces, and expand beyond a lot of the things that we're thinking about today, that we're typically thinking about. So we're all a part of social networks. You can log on to the internet, never. And you're a part of a social network. And what it is a number of ideas and other things. We were talking earlier today in Ethan Waters' session about social currency. All sorts of things get passed back and forth. It's not independent autonomous units, but rather it's about relationships, relational ties, and links. And the networks are the structures. And, you know, just... I want this one. There are all kinds of things that can happen within a social network. An economic system, a nation state, is a social network. Okay, so now that we've pounded this into your head, there are actors within a social network, which is an individual node. An actor can be a person. An actor can be an individual. An actor can be a business transaction. An actor can be a professional. And the types of values, the things that people exchange, are vast and wide. Anything from kinship to money to behavior to affiliation. So a couple things. Social software. What is it? Software for social networks. We've got friends of friend networks, blogs, wikis, instant messenger, collaborative environments, and email, and cell phone software, and the whole web, and... it goes on and on and on. So I have a problem with a couple of the definitions that we've tended to use, and I think that we do ourselves a disservice when this is the approach that we take. What gets important is to open up the bigger questions, to understand what people are really doing, what they're really exchanging, what they really need to exchange, and then and only then coming up with the concepts and the ideas and the ways to support them. One of the things, going to the side of aesthetics, since I am a designer and I am teaching in a design school, I'm teaching people how to consider not just these social things, but also to manifest it in interfaces and in applications that make sense for people, that work well for people, and that are very desirable. Has anybody here read Don Norman's new book, Emotional Design? Anybody out there? Is anybody here familiar with Don Norman? Okay. Don Norman is a cognitive psychologist. Several years ago, he designed a very which of usability has some things are it is a beautiful if you show. You know what in between is for patients did silly and your same thing exist. And
don't make it real. First, the thing, irritation. Talking to you see beauty. You look back from a, because although I do, there's two elements of social networks that came about, and this is where I disagree with Molly a little bit. There's one is the networks. Some of them come from a place of reflection. And how you see beauty, beauty because first I actually went back.
She missed it.
So when I was starting to think about what it meant to have aesthetics and social networks, I actually went back first to thinking about what different people, different theoreticians thought when they talked about aesthetics. One of the things that you will hear over and over again is talking about beauty becoming a self-fulfilling item. The fact that there's beauty in yourself, you see beauty in the things that mean something to you. If you look back at some of the rhetoricians, they were often interested in how aesthetics, you know, come from a place of reflection, a place where you see yourself in some sort of image and you're able to make sense of this. This is actually quite relevant to social networks, because although I do, there's two elements of social networks that came about, and this is where I disagree with Molly a little bit. There's one is the graph theory, and sociology took on that graph theory component. But there was another part that was the anthropology of social networks, the anthropology of kinship that came long before people were trying to make graphs out of relationships. But the thing about it is that no matter what became valuable to people was starting to think about how they fit into a larger scheme, how they made sense with the people around them. The image on the screen is something called Visual Who. It's a project by Judith Donath of the Media Lab that I re-implemented a couple of years after she did. What the idea that we were trying to do with this was to say, what are these, you know, quintessential relationships, these focuses that you have for different items of interest? In this image, you see people that are interested in hackers. But one of the things that we found was it's not simply, are you interested in this topic or are you not? But how much are you like the people that are interested in that topic? So the way that this graph works is that there's an archetypical person for a hacker, and each person is compared to how they, you know, how typical they are to that archetype. The thing about it is, of course, one of the first lessons you learn whenever you put up a map of people and relationships between people, individuals look for themselves first. They want to find where they are, how they fit into the scheme, and they want to find how they fit to the people around them. And the reason for this is that the people around you are actually some of the best representations of who you are. You know, you have these shared focuses, these shared things that you have with people like you. So by seeing them, you also see yourself. A couple years later, I started in on a project called Social Network Fragments. This was some of my early visualization work. What I did was took people's email, and this is like a classic moment of behavior-driven social networks. People constantly have, you know, email that they interact with other people. They determine who they can connect to one another by CCing people on the same message. And all of a sudden, you realize that if you have many years of graph or many years of data about relationships, you can build a map of it. So this is what I did. I started building maps of people's networks that they did through their email interactions. Again, stunning to see. And what is the first thing that people do? They look for themselves. How are they in relation to you? The scary thing was that, you know, if I build a visualization of my email, I don't just say something about me. I say something about all of my friends, all of the people around me. And so one of the things that I, the first thing that I did when I came up with a graph that I could see is that I sent it out to people that were in my graph, and they were like, oh my God, where did you get this? And it creates this conversation of like, oh, why are we linked? Why aren't they linked? You know, who are these people? What are the different clusters? Another version that you saw that came out a while back was people looking at IM buddy lists, trying to come up with visualizations of like, what are the different relationships you can see? This is a project out of Caltech called Buddy Zoo. The thing that all of these three projects, and there's a variety of other ones, share in common is that they take data about behavior-driven networks, and they create a visualization, a representation of them. And this is why it's fundamentally different than what we started seeing when we saw Six Degrees and Rise and Friendster and whatnot. What you saw with, you know, in this case, Friendster, is actually an articulated social network. Here I am, I get to say who my friends are, and I get to say who they are in context of me. This is, of course, intriguing to people. If you talk to anybody about the their Friendster behavior, the first thing that they do after they put up a profile is go find their friends. Not just to link to, but to sort of see where they fit in, who knows who. It's the game that everybody loved about these sites, was seeing how people fit into their group around them. There's something else that was very important about what people chose to do on these sites. The first thing that they did was sort of see who invited them. People have a variety of different contexts in which they represent themselves, but depending on who invited them to these sites, they will choose the presentation that they think is appropriate to this. And it's one of the fascinating things about almost all of these sites is that there are these clusters, these components, where people start to look alike. You have all the goths, you have all the Burning Man people, you have all the bloggers, and they start to create a consistent representation that they think is appropriate for that community. And one of the biggest tricks is to start dealing with the fact that you all of a sudden have to deal with separate communities that you need to bridge together. It's one of the things that, you know, I love hearing people talk about which one is the best. You know, which one should I join? You know, Orchid, Friendster, Tribe. And it's like, which one is the community that's more like you? I mean, that's what starts to make it actually fundamentally interesting for people. And that's literally what gets people to stay, was that when their community is represented there, when they feel like they can be a part of something. Then you have other representations. Here's Orchid, which is another one of these sites that has come up. And, you know, I have yet to figure out what this map represents. That's been my ongoing problem. But the thing about all of these different elements, these two examples of an articulated network, is that they're not actually showing you, or it's a lot harder to see the representation between the people beyond you. I mean, compare that to some of these networks where you can see not just your relationship to an individual, but their relationships to one another. You start to see the clusters. So one of the things about figuring out the elements on these sites, people immediately try to find their clusters. They do it through a couple of different means. They first try to create, you know, tribes, groups, fakesters, to try to come up with some way of representing the community of people like them. They also try to do it through, you know, visual language. One of the things that I saw was interesting on Orchid the other day is that people started putting up the same image to represent their sadness for what was going on in Spain. It lets you quickly, visually, get a grasp of who these people are and what's interesting for them. But the thing you also have to understand is that an articulated social network has a fundamentally different aesthetic and realization than anything that the sociologists were talking about. I think that's one of my fascinations with this, is that what people are representing here isn't real. It is a presentation, it is a performance. It's an attempt to come up with a way of representing themselves in the context without causing social problems. So the worst thing you can do is when you have a representation here and someone says, "Will you be my friend?" And you're like, "I don't know you." What do you say to them? You say yes because you feel really guilty. So one of the things about it is if you look back to what sociologists were doing when they were mapping out these networks, they were mapping out representations of people based on what they were willing to say to a trusted authority. That's a totally different kind of graph and a totally different set of behaviors. So one of the things that I've been fascinated by is, you know, I've been interviewing people, and I've interviewed hundreds of people at this point, and I love to ask them to go through their Friendster, Orchid, Tribe network and tell me who these people are and who they're willing to talk to and who they aren't. And it's fascinating for me because I also interview people who have quit one of these sites. And what does it take for people to quit them? They quit when all of a sudden two elements of social uncomfortability come together. They don't want to deal with it. It's really awkward. But getting back to some of the aesthetics element, what draws people into this is a way of seeing their friends, seeing their relationships, seeing their communities. And if we think about what that means long term, if you think about creating new social software or you create mobile technologies that are supposed to be about friendships, think about what draws people to them. And it really is about seeing themselves within a context. This one, I think you want to open it to discussion.
Sure.
So, thank you.
I think we're.
Sir, but I'd ask you.
No, about
that. Wireless.
Any moment, the right interest community.
already been. That was added to the aesthetics of such earlier visual aesthetic sense that you, for one thing, who sort of extreme or face. No. Any kind.
You mentioned this. The most comfortable. Which was like, you know, you individually take, you know, a great value and importance out of what you do professionally. And that representation, you feel like you can flesh out and make meaning of. You know, take any of the burners and try to put them on LinkedIn, and it's like the world's worst idea. They're just like, what the hell is this? But the thing about it is they go to tribe, they run wild, and guess what? They love it. And it's, you know, you sit to tribes like, uh-oh, what did we do? Or talk to, you know, talk to Friendster. They're not entirely thrilled to have the freaks there either. The thing about it is those communities acquired value because the people, they socially hacked what was available to create a something that gave them an aesthetic response, gave them a way to sort of have the freedom to represent themselves and to represent their community in a way that felt real.
But what I think is really interesting about what you said is this. My blog is getting better and better about representing me and representing who I am. I'm turning to the people in the room who design and build these things. What could we give you? What could be created to give you the best possible way of representing yourself? The most appropriate personal aesthetic for you, the most appropriate representation of you. What would that be? I mean, I bet that it doesn't look like a web page. I bet that it doesn't look like a mobile phone interface. I bet it looks like something a lot richer.
Okay, Craig and then Adina. Craig and then.
Tapestry, you're part of a work. That's where the social network and the aesthetic interweave together.
Clay Shirky, who's in the middle, center representation, just an aesthetic self, but of other people's effect on your representation of yourself. So I'd like to point out, I don't know if anybody can see, I'm not on there.
Flip it back over.
Clay Shirky, who's in the middle, sent a representation of him that doesn't look like him on my network. And it created an interesting havoc within 2 days of him putting that up there. I started getting emails from people asking me where my porn site was. And I was like, what the hell are you asking me for? And, you know, at the time, most of the people who were putting up pictures or who I was connected to looked like Burning Man freaks. At the time, people weren't allowed to put up their URLs. They still aren't on Friendster. So as a result, people started realizing that there was an aesthetic to the people who were porn queens. That aesthetic was young hipster punk friends and old white men. So all of a sudden, people saw this representation on my site and assumed that I was one of the suicide girls. And they started writing to me over and over again. What you end up finding on some of these things is that your aesthetic is not simply something that you get to control. Even if, you know, for example, who you connect to, what's your value is to them, what their value is for how they want to represent themselves, that constantly affects back on you. And it's a really funny space to create that kind of thing there. Because all of a sudden, it's just, you're not just in control of your presentation of self.
I'm so happy that old white men are good for that, for helping define your identity.
I don't know, John, when we linked, nobody was asking me about my porn site. But I think it's interesting. It points to an aesthetics of association. And I think of high school students, punk high school kids, saying, I am so individual. I am such an individual. And while they look exactly like all of the other individuals, everybody else that they know. It really is, again, that kind of that identification and that association.
Adina had a question for a long time. When you mention a neighborhood, this is the, oh.
somebody so wins here's a poll. It came off tools, somebody I know.
What? Where you can from Adam.
Ways that. Context, and that these relationships really only begin to make sense in context. We miss the ability to set degrees that are meaningful to us, and with many of these types of sites, we also don't have adequate visualizations that are useful to us. I would say that it's not a next 10 years thing. I hope in 10 years we don't use things like this anymore, and we have much more intuitive interfaces to use. But what I would expect to happen in the next year or two, in the next very small amount of time, is that people will start coming up with really great interfaces to use. The problem is it's just a massive amount of data to crunch and to surf through in order to visualize this.
Well, the thing is we're talking about a me-centered universe here, and there is a lot of aesthetic aggregates that are based on human history of places where art's already happening. It hasn't stopped because the internet came. There's plenty of art. There's places where you go and there's poetry being exchanged. There's online slams. There's so much exchange of aesthetic content that gives you that context of people. People aren't representing themselves just on what I did today and I went to. They're talking about reaching deep inside them and making beautiful objects, things that apply outside. They're artists reaching out. And when an artist reaches out and places that on the web, then that is a really important node to base this kind of design on, because we've cut off the artist. For a long time, and the designers to cut off, but important thing. Then the designing is by all of the art.
And there's a.
To function out, but it's well as all of these other networks. I was stunned that people were using my visualizations as a mechanism to have storytelling about their lives, to use it to come up with ways to talk to people about past relationships simply because it gave them an artifact to do so. When it comes to Friendster, what's the intended function to get people to date friends of friends? Personally, I don't care. What's fascinating is that it's created a community, it's created language, it's created a way for people to actually engage in ways they didn't even think were possible. And so I think that's one of the fascinating tensions for me is it's like, what is the intended function? What is the resultant function? And how do they actually play together and wreak havoc? And one of the things that's hard, many people in here are designers of these things. One of the hardest things is to watch as people do things that you had no idea they were going to and are really a little disturbing. And some of it's like, what are the gray points? What does it mean that Friendster is being used by the KKK for people to attack, people of color because they suddenly have access to them? That's scary. Most people in this room would say, we don't like that. But the thing about it is it's also allowing people to reach out to different communities that they didn't know. So it's the same kind of potential with different results because of, our moral code.
That reminded me of something. It's a kind of a thought I wanted to leave everybody with because we didn't have time to talk about it. But when Howard was talking today, it hit me that one of the things that we're doing when we start going into these social networks is building a narrative, and that a narrative can have an aesthetic too. And that's like, I didn't have time to really explore that or think about it. That's maybe next year we can come back and talk about that. But I think that's interesting in itself. Sandy? Maybe next year. More over there.
This is the first people talk about it being their only online representation. Other people who are these sites.
It's the point of longer, yeah.
But also, take a look at these sites. A lot of the people who are representing themselves on here, this is the first time they've seen themselves in a community. Like, over and over again, there's 6 million users on Friendster. A lot of these people talk about it being their only online representation. For a lot of these tools give people new ways of representing. It brings new people into the fold. It allows new people to challenge things. And as an ethnographer, it's creating a field day for me because it's comparative somewhat to what people are doing offline, creating whole new behaviors, whole new intentions, and creating whole new actual tensions between creators and users.
I think that we're out of time. And thank you, everybody. We should do that.
And we're done.
Tech Chalik, but
Social Text, head of international for Technorati, lead investor for Six Apart, and
oh, is that like the coolest button?
Because, you know, I missed the girls already. Even then, I had to. So I figured out.
Oh, is that.
And we're done. Okay. Let me let everybody introduce themselves.
Because, you know, I missed the girls already. Even then, I had to. So I figured I would buy an official fashion accessory with a logo on it, you know, because I normally eschew logo.